Welcome back to Navigating Cybersecurity in the Modern B2B Landscape, a GB2B podcast series, exploring how enterprise leaders can strengthen their cybersecurity posture while aligning with evolving digital, operational, and ESG-driven priorities. And I'm honored to welcome back our guest speaker, Mr. Abbas Kudrati, joining us for the second time in this special three-part series. Mr. Kudrati is the Chief Identity and Security Advisor APAC at Silverfort, has formerly served as Chief Cybersecurity Advisor at Microsoft Asia, and a globally recognized thought leader in cyber risk and governance. Today's episode is called Zero Trust Security, a Must for the Modern B2B Ecosystem. And we are excited to unpack how this model is transforming the way organizations approach trust, identity, and infrastructure protection. Abbas, welcome back to the GB2B podcast. It's great to have you with us again.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to talking to you. And Zero Trust is my favorite topic, so I just can't wait to share the wisdom about that.
Let's get started. Yes, and we also can't wait to hear more from you. So let's start at the top. Many executives hear the term Zero Trust, but may not be fully clear on what it really means in practice. So for our audience, how would you explain Zero Trust in simple terms? And why is this approach gaining such momentum, particularly across global corporate ecosystems?
Yeah, absolutely. So see, the fundamental of Zero Trust has been around for a while, but we never called it as a Zero Trust. We used to call them different model, like Google used to call them Beyond Trust, and Zerico model used to call it with a different name. But fundamentally, what it is a security model based on certain set of principles. What Zero Trust security model talks about is you should never trust anyone and verify everything and everything which is connecting to your network. If you go back traditionally, how we used to operate in our organization, we always used to allow our employee to come to our office. We allow them to connect first and then authenticate and authorize. However, now in case of a Zero Trust, we have now flipped the script. Mm-hmm. What we ask our employers to do in case of a Zero Trust model is to authenticate and authorize first and then allow them to connect. So simply said, Zero Trust is now completely flipping the situation, which assumes that no user or device should inherently be trusted, even if they are inside the perimeter, even if they are inside my company. And every access request is now continuously being verified based on identity, based on device health, based on location, even based on behavior. And if you look at currently, because of remote working and everything, and the perimeter which we used to have as a firewall is now completely dissolved. People are working from anywhere, anytime, using any device. With the cloud-first architecture, with the adoption of SaaS, all this traditional castle and moat kind of a model doesn't allow us to work anymore in that fashion. And that is why organization has to think about Zero Trust as a security model which could align with how their business is being done today, especially when we talk about decentralization, digital, and being a dynamic. So absolutely follow the three core principles which Zero Trust talks about, which is least privilege, never trust, always verify, and assume breach. As a three core principle which you have to follow if you want to adopt a Zero Trust security model.
That's a brilliant breakdown. And also, you have shared the principles and how striking or outdated assumptions in the legacy frameworks still leave so many organizations exposed, right? So what do you suggest in terms of these legacy security frameworks, which you've already mentioned, right, a few of them, but then especially in this context where traditional perimeter security no longer holds up, according to you, what are the vulnerabilities or challenges still has to be addressed really authentically and properly?
Yeah, absolutely. So a legacy model always often assume trust based on their network location. For example, if I am in the company, If I'm behind the company firewall within working in the building, I'm a trusted employee, I'm a trusted resource, my laptop is trusted. However, this kind of a trust creates blind spot. Because if one attacker breaches the perimeter, could be my firewall, they can move laterally easily across my company. And that is why Zero Trust is able to address some of the core requirements, such as overprivileged access. One of the principles says you have to have a least privilege model. That means you have to remove all the administrator from your account. Second thing it helps in addressing is lack of visibility into the user and the device behavior. If my device is compromised or having a ransomware, immediately I should be getting disconnected from my organization network. And once it is fixed, it goes back and connected again, right? Third thing, it helps you address about the inability to respond dynamically to all the threat. I talked about the third principle of an assumed breach, where you are having a mindset of an attacker, that attackers are continuously targeting my company. So I should have a layered defensive approach in my company, in my organization. If first layer fails, second layer will help me out. Similarly, the last but not the least is about the complexity which hybrid and a multi-cloud environment brings in. But
yes,
because now with Zero Trust, we need to bring more adaptive. We need to think about an identity-centric security approach which could enforce the least privilege. And we should be able to monitor everything which is happening in our organization in a real-time manner. So if you follow this model, definitely you are able to overcome many of these challenges and vulnerability which this on-prem or the legacy environment could bring in your company.
Great. So you've already mentioned or touched base on the point that I was about to ask you about the multi-party environments, and especially when we talk about distributed supply chains, remote teams, which I've already mentioned earlier, and cloud-first operations, right? So again, can you throw some light on why is this particularly gaining momentum and critical for all these kinds of enterprise environments?
Yeah, absolutely. So number one reason, I mean, especially the Zero Trust became the word of the mouth or a very commonly used term, especially during the COVID era, when organization has to all of a sudden adapt working in a hybrid environment. They are no longer allowed to come to office because of the lockdown and everyone has to work from home.
Yes.
So enterprise today, since the COVID-19 timeframe, there were there some organization who used to allow boundaryless work, but after COVID, a lot of organizations are now operating in a boundaryless world, as we call it, remote working, hybrid working. That's the number one. The second thing is the supply chain. Now, supply chain is spanning over the continent, not only in your country. You have vendors and the contractors and the partner working with you as a supply chain provider or a third party security supplier provider across the world. Same thing, employee and partners are also working from anywhere. Next one is data. Data are residing everywhere. It could be on your phone, it could be on your laptop, it could be on your SaaS application, it could be on your cloud. And that is where the Zero Trust is able to now provide you what we call it a unified security strategy, where you are now allowing and enforcing authentication authorization for every request based on the context, based on the context of location, behavior, kind of data and whatnot. Second thing is getting important because now, because of Zero Trust, you are now forced to segment your network. There's a concept of micro segmentation within Zero Trust, which could help you contain the breach. For example, if there is a ransomware on my laptop, only my machine is infected and it will not go and infect all my servers or applications which are running in a separate micro segmented environment. So it becomes very, very important in that case. And the third and the last one is how you are extending all the trust policies to your external users and the system as well, apart from your internal, which is making really essential for managing all the risk without compromising the agility of your organization in terms of how they work and what they work.
Okay, so absolutely, you've given so much of clarity now. Now, as you already know that the environmental, social and governance frameworks or factors, ESG in short, is gaining prominence and it's right now required to be adhered to by majority of the companies globally, right? Especially in terms of digital accountability. Now, in your view, how does Zero Trust support broader ESG goals, particularly around data governance, responsible tech use, or risk transparency? If you were to give us some more insight into it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we covered a little bit about ESG, but again, reiterating, ESG is all about responsibility environmentally, sociably, and in the governance part of it. And Zero Trust is absolutely able to enhance the core three area. First one is a governance. Governance through implementing an identity-centric control and auditability, so people can verify what's happening, you know. Second one is about the social trust, which you are now implementing and safeguarding to your customers and for your employee data. The third thing we cover as a part of ASG is sustainability. Sustainability by reducing the reliance on hardware's heavy perimeter defenses to going into a more software-based perimeter defenses or working from home and allowing people to work from them. Plus, it enforces more of a transparency and compliance, which is one of the key pillar when it comes to digital accountability in the ESG framework. So, governance, social trust, sustainability, and achieving your compliance requirement by having more sustainable environment, working remotely, less travel, and all those things.
Absolutely. However, when we talk about responsible tech use, which is quite tricky and critical as well. So how do you think ESG can be adhered to or for Zero Trust to support that in terms of responsible tech use? I mean, data governance is there, but then and risk transparency is there, but how do you want to share your views on this responsible tech use architecture?
See, if you talk about responsible tech use, the Zero Trust is allowing you to work remotely. And in many cases, you are even allowed to bring your own device as well. So it is a less overhead on the organization to provide them the machine. Typically, people have, I have an iPhone, I have an iPad, I have my machine as well. And I can work seamlessly across all the three devices, however I want. So definitely, when I think this is the core component of how responsible tech usage can be done, bringing your own device. Having, of course, security comes always as a center of everything what you do, but Zero Trust helps them in achieving a better security by implementing the core three principles which you touched upon, which is zero least privilege, always verify, and assume breach.
Yes, absolutely. So fascinating perspective and much needed. Now, do you have any real world example where Zero Trust helped minimize a breach or risk, perhaps in a multi-organization or supply chain setup?
Yeah, I can give you many. I can give you a couple of examples. So first one is very well known, not going a little bit far because everyone knows about this example, is SolarWinds supply chain attack, which occurred in 2020. So if organization has implemented zero trust principles and if they are implemented correctly, one of the core thing as a part of zero trust is segmentation, micro segmentation I touched upon. I talked about just-in-time access and continuous monitoring. So these were the few things which would help organizations like a SolarWinds to were able to detect anomalies at a very early stage, and also they were able to contain the lateral movement at a at significant early stage. Then it could have been catastrophic in that case as well. Second thing is about. One of the other example is a Google Beyond Corp, which was developed after an advanced persistent threat was targeted towards Google. So immediately they shifted towards a zero trust model, which they call it Beyond Corp, and effectively decoupled the access from the network location and setting up to a new standard as well, which is very well known as a Google Beyond Corp network.
Wow, quite powerful examples. And when it comes to implementation across emerging markets, are there any notable compliance trends or regional regulations influencing zero trust adoption?
Yeah, there are a lot of influencing. So if you go to US, The CISA, the Critical Infrastructure Security Agency, they come up with their mandatory requirement that everyone should in the government should use CISA. They even have their maturity model. Plus, if you look at frameworks like GDPR in Europe, PDPA in Singapore, or India's PDPA Act, which is Personal Data Protection Act, these all are pushing a lot of strong identity control, data minimization control, auditability control. All these things are pushing to adapt on a zero trust. Especially if you look at the emerging market like India and Southeast Asia, these are some of the more growing emphasis is on how you are securing the data sovereignty, especially when you are pushing it onto the multi-cloud setup. What are you doing in terms of the cross-border data governance? How are you setting up the accountability in the third party risk? So zero trust is offering all these kind of benefits to meet this compliance by design approach or compliance by design, security by design approach to regulator, which is now constantly tightening their grip on this data security and privacy requirement for the customers.
Very insightful. Now, you've already mentioned about incorporating governance, I mean, zero trust within the governance structure system within an organization, especially when it is a multi-setup structure. So what would you say are the foundational pillars that leaders, especially those in strategic partnerships, must understand before embracing zero trust?
Yeah, I would typically call five core pillars of zero trust. There could be eight or nine, depending upon which model you follow, but let's talk about the five core pillars. First of all, identity as a new parameter. All the users, application, device must strongly be verified. Human identities, non-human identity. So identity is your new parameter. Second one, which always goes back to the first principle about least privilege access. So user will be allowed or given access only based on what need to know, need to do basis, or just in time, just enough access. That's the second one. Second, we also touched about in the previous question is segmentation, micro segmentation specifically, which is allowing the organization to limit the lateral movement of an attack. The fourth one I talked about is a continuous monitoring where trust needs to be earned and reevaluated in the real time basis. There is not, okay, once you are trusted, doesn't mean that you will not be verified against. There is a continuous verification based on behavior, location, and whatnot. We covered that. Last one, which is the fifth one, is having a assume breach mindset, which is the third principle of that, where you are always operating under the possibility that a breach has occurred, attacker is already within my organization, and these must be understood and accepted across all the participating entities, including the in your partnership ecosystem. So the five pillars: identity as a new parameter, least privilege, micro segmentation, continuous monitoring, and the fifth one is a assume breach mindset.
Wow, such clarity and such a thought out breakdown. And that's going to resonate, especially with the CXOs trying to align cyber priorities with long term growth. Now, for those ready to take the leap, what initial steps should organizations take when transitioning toward a zero trust model? Should we consider all these five core pillars to be adhered to? And beyond this, what else do you suggest?
I always say start small. So I would give four key steps. Of course, it can be expanded once you start. First thing is having a visibility, or I would call it inventory. Inventory of all your users, your device, your data flows, where the data goes from one system to another system, on-prem or the cloud. So inventory and the visibility is the number one or the first step. Second thing is to have a classification of it. Because once you know what data you have, it is very important for you to have a classification of that as well. So classify based on asset sensitivity and a business criticality. The third one is you have to establish strong identity governance, which includes like controls such as multi-factor authentication, MFA, single sign-on, conditional access, or we call it dynamic access engine or a conditional access engine. So you need to enable that if then else statement kind of a thing. And the fourth one I would say is defining your protect surface, not just your attack surface, what matters the most, but from there, Incrementally, you build your control towards your access, visibility, micro-segmentation, and whatnot. So attack surface is different, but now let's focus on the protection as well, which is one of your next step as well. So four steps: visibility, inventory, classify of the data and assets. Third is identity governance, MFA, SSO, and the third is fourth is a protection of attack surface.
Okay, protect surface, you said, defining protect surface, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and great roadmap. And what about the common pitfalls you have seen, especially in B2B environments with interdependencies right now, based on your experience?
Yeah, people always think, okay, I can buy a product from the market and I can say I've done zero trust. Well,
Yes.
you should not be thinking this as a tool, not a strategy, if it's not a product which you can buy. It is a principle, it is a behavior, it is a strategy which you have to implement. Second thing I would say is trying to do all at once. Zero trust is a journey, not a switch or a button. You flick it and you are done. It takes years. An example of a Microsoft, they have been doing zero trust for last 8 years and they're still ongoing. The project could never be finished. It's very dynamic. There is a new threats, new business, new changes in the technology, and you have to revisit the whole thing. So it is an ongoing journey. That's what I call it, zero trust as a journey. And I have a book on that, Zero
Yes.
Trust Across Your Digital Journey, which if reader would like to read, they can
Yes.
find the book on the Amazon. The third one I'll talk about is overlooking the third party access. We always ignore the partner and the third party vendor who are working on our side. They are also one of the weakest link. If you ask any big CISO, corporate CISO, they will say, what is your biggest threat? They would say, I am able to manage my risk, but I am much worried about the partner and the contractor who are working with me because they can't do things what they are doing. So there has to be a governance model in place to overlook the third party access as well. And the last one of the least is failing to align with the business unit. Don't think zero trust is a technology project or a security project. You have to have a buy-in from all the department. Success depends on the phased, priority-driven rollout, which is tied with your business outcome. So I always say and evangelize that zero trust is a business project, not a technology or a security project. That's where
Well,
most of the people fail when they think it's a technology project.
yes, that's so true. And thank you so much for also bringing up the book that you've just mentioned. And I'm sure that will
Sure.
definitely come handy. Right. So, and let's address the elephant in the room now, cost and complexity. How can leadership teams make the case for zero trust as a long-term investment, not just a reactive strategy?
Absolutely. So the answer to this question was in my last point.
Yes.
Make zero trust as a business enabler and not just a security mandate.
Correct.
You need to frame it in terms of risk reduction and resilience. How are you able to reduce the risk to the business? How are you making your business more resilient? Use a return of investment model, which includes the cost of breach, especially the cost of breach avoidance. You talk about compliance gain and also how much operational efficiency you have bring in by implementing zero trust technology or zero trust architecture as a framework. Next one is start with a quick win. Quick win is, for example, implementing an MFA, which is very cheap and easy and brings a huge value. So identity access control, segmentation, this shows a really early value, or I would say low hanging fruit, which people can implement it. And last but not the least is aligning the whole digital transformation with the zero trust enabling security innovation, which could bring it. So if you follow that, absolutely the IT leader could see a huge advantage in terms of cost and a long-term investment. And as I say, it's a business project. It's not a technology project. I keep repeating that.
That's
Yeah.
right. That's right. Of course. So, like you've already clearly defined the inclusions of how to go ahead with the strategy of investment, but how do they measure the ROI or security effectiveness?
There are a few things. First one is a risk-based metrics. I always call it a mean time to detect, mean time to respond, mean time to contain. These kind of things which are risk-based metric, which definitely your security operation team will be able to provide you that. That's number one thing. Then you look at the access privilege metrics or access metrics. What is the reduction of overprivileged access you are able to achieve by implementing a zero trust? And the third is about audit trail, posture scoring, posture management. Could be your identity security posture management, cloud security posture management, data security posture management. All these based on identity behavior, access event, and there are tools like SIEM tool, IAM dashboard, ITDR, identity threat detection response. This all platform will provide a huge cross organization visibility to your leadership team, which could definitely help them show a great return of investment value.
Really valuable points. So now that we are moving towards the end of this podcast session, I would like to know, how do you see the zero trust paradigm evolving over the next 3 to 5 years?
Well, we are seeing a lot of AI power analytics coming into play, especially in the identity side of it. And I call it AI powered identity analytics, which is able to detect the anomalies in the real time. Then there are a lot of convergence happening across the Zero Trust framework with convergence with the SASE model, with XDR, with ITDR, with container security, and list can go on. The third thing I'm seeing is automation of the policy. I give an example of Microsoft Entra Active Directory or Microsoft Entra Conditional Access Engine. It comes with hundreds of built-in policy, and these policies are very which could bring a lot of automation as well, especially when you're working in a hybrid environment. When you implement technologies such as Silverfort, which could extend your cloud technology to your on-prem resources and automate the whole policy which you have on cloud, the same policy are implemented in your hybrid environment as well. And that's something new. I'm seeing it in the organization which I work for, Silverfort, is doing very well in that space. And the last one of the list, also one of my favorite topic, is extension of a non-human identity. We have touched upon it a little bit, but reiterating, like bots, API, service accounts, and now we are talking about Agentify AI, the AI chatbot which are creating all the non-human identities. So Zero Trust is going to shift from security initiative to more of a digital trust framework, which it is kind of a foundational element for all the enterprise interaction in your in any company. So yeah, a lot of new things. I'm really excited to see how and where Zero Trust is taking us next with the leverage of AI, ML automations, and a lot of this convergence with other non-human identities as well.
Brilliant, brilliant foresight. And we are also very excited as to where this trajectory goes, right? So that's a great note to close on, concise, strategic, and actionable. Thank you, Abbas. And that wraps up episode 2 of Navigating Cybersecurity in the Modern B2B Landscape and Ajee B2B podcast series. A huge thank you to Mr. Abbas Kudrati for joining us once again and sharing such valuable insights on why zero trust security is critical for the modern business ecosystem. To our
My
listeners,
pleasure.
right. So, to our listeners, thank you for joining us on this journey. Be sure to check out the episode 1, where we also explored the cyber risk and other anomalies which needs to be addressed. And up next in the final episode of this special GB2B series, we'll be diving into cyber identity securities, which is also one of the favorite topics of Mr. Kudrati, right?
Absolutely.
So it's a critical domain. A digital in, interaction a multi as digital interactions multiplies and identity-based attacks surge across industries. So we'll explore how businesses can safeguard digital identities, navigate security or identity governances, and ensure accountability in an age where who you are is just as important as what you access. So until next time, stay secure, stay strategic, and stay connected. And thank you once again, Mr. Kudrati.
Thank you.